Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Dairy on the Air. I'm Lucas Lynch, and I serve as CEO of Midwest Dairy. And today, we're featuring two guests in our conversation, Kara Schrager, a registered dietitian and certified diabetes educator at the Joslin Diabetes Center, and Julie Mazzanastro, also a registered dietitian and vice president of wellness here at Midwest Dairy. Ladies, welcome to the program. Kara, I'd love to learn a bit more about yourself and where you're from.
Sure. I'm actually from outside of Boston. I grew up in Lexington, Massachusetts, and I spent a little time in the Midwest going to school at University of Wisconsin and decided I wanted to head back home to Boston. And I've worked as a registered dietitian for about 8 years now, primarily in the outpatient area. I was at a VA for about 4.5 years, a VA hospital. And then I've been at Joslin Diabetes Center for the last 2.5 years. And it's been really exciting immersing myself in all things diabetes. And I've had the opportunity to be involved in a variety of communications, including various speaking engagements and media communications. And I'm here in the Twin Cities because I just gave a talk at the MAND conference, the Minneapolis Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics conference, primarily about eating patterns and diabetes prevention.
Awesome. Well, welcome to the program. And a very special thank you to your Veterans Administration service as well. Julie, tell us about yourself.
Well, thanks, Lucas. I am a Minnesota girl, born and raised. Grew up in Rochester, but have lived in Minneapolis the most of my life now. I spent about 6 years across the river in Wisconsin. I went to the University of Wisconsin at Stout for my undergrad degree, as well as my master's degree in nutrition and dietetics, but have been in Minnesota the rest of that time. My career has been varied with lots of different backgrounds, focused mainly on wellness and how to keep people healthy and well. So coming full circle now at Midwest Dairy, I have a title as wellness, is very gratifying. But I've been working on behalf of dairy farmers for 12 years.
Both of you, welcome to the program. You know, today is going to be a really rich conversation around a lot of things that are clearly impacting our country. And we're going to jump right into it, but a little bit of a level set. We know that with statistics showing a growing number of individuals at risk of diabetes or currently managing type 2 diabetes, I'm really looking forward to our conversation today. Over the next half hour or so, we're going to be focusing on some new research that showcases the important role that dairy foods play in helping to reduce the risk of type 2 diabetes. We'll also learn more about the commitment that dairy farmers and really their dairy checkoff across the country have been working to build awareness among health and wellness professionals about some of that new research that showcases how dairy can be a healthy part of the diet for people with prediabetes or who are even managing type 2 diabetes. You know, as we kick off our conversation, Kara, let's talk a little bit more about your background. What is it about this that's made you interested in this field of study?
So I think I'm very passionate about prevention and being as healthy as possible and doing what we can to prevent these risk factors that are modifiable, meaning we can make changes to our lifestyle to prevent disease outcomes. So I think it's really important also to provide evidence-based research and recommendations to our patients.
Evidence-based research. Yes. You know, when you said an awful lot in that one sentence. Mm-hmm. You know, evidence-based research in a day and age when there's so much information out on the web. You know, here we are, we're close to the dairy community, but this is real science that's driving this conversation and bringing this conversation home to the dairy community. Julie, as you reflect on that, why do you feel called to this work?
I've been passionate about dairy my entire life, but the Dairy Council in particular, to your point, Lucas, has been grounded in science and in research. And dairy farmers, I think, can be very, very proud of the long history, going back to the over 100 years, really, to the early 1900s, when a lot of that research was emerging. And dairy farmers knew they had a product that was good for people, that was good for kids. They knew that they didn't have the research. And as nutrition research really at the time was also emerging, a lot of the vitamins and minerals were being discovered, if you will. There was doctors such as Evie McCollum who made that connection between health and vitamin D. And milk was a part of that. And that was kind of the kickoff, if you will, of National Dairy Council and how they got their start. So dairy farmers have been funding and been interested in the research that shows that their product, that their cows produce, does beneficial things. And there's a long history of that. There's a long research and even more, like we're talking about today, emerging, that is really exciting. And I'm really thrilled to be a part of it.
You know, as we get into this, maybe just to take a step back and let's just do a grounding. If you're not really familiar with the medical terms of diabetes, level set us.
Sure.
What is diabetes?
So diabetes is a chronic illness in which there are different types of diabetes. So type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune disease. So the beta cells, which are in the pancreas, are attacked. Our body, if we have type 1 diabetes, our body attacks those beta cells. So these beta cells produce a hormone called insulin. So type 1 diabetes happens when our beta cells shut down and don't produce any insulin. And those patients or individuals have to take exogenous insulin, so take insulin shots or insulin injections. And with type 2 diabetes, it's a different type of disease, similarly in that the body isn't producing maybe enough insulin, or that the insulin is being overused and the body just doesn't really take up the insulin's job as well. So with type 2 diabetes, it's often a form of insulin resistance. So insulin's job normally in our body is to lower our blood sugars. So when we eat foods with carbohydrates, it turns into sugar or glucose in the blood. And insulin's role is to lower those blood sugars by putting that glucose into our cell for energy. So with type 2 diabetes, the body just isn't doing enough of its job to lower the glucose enough. So people with type 2 diabetes may not need to take insulin. They might be okay just with diet and exercise in terms of controlling their blood sugars, or they might need some additional medications to help lower the blood sugars. Or in some cases, over time, the body just isn't able to keep up with the demand, so they might need to actually take insulin as well.
So type 1, autoimmune, the mm-hmm. body basically turns on itself.
Yep.
Type 2, you have a situation where the body's just not processing the sugars at a fast enough pace, mm-hmm. and diet and exercise are a place to mitigate that. And as a country, you know, we think about diabetes being what someone else has, mm-hmm. but essentially 10% of our country's population today has diabetes. Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit more about that, Kara.
Yeah, so 90 to 95% of that 10% of the population has type 2 diabetes. So a big risk factor for type 2 diabetes is having overweight and obesity, in addition to a lot of other risk factors, physical inactivity, maybe just poor nutritional choices. And a lot of those, in some cases, aren't in our control. A lot of the risk factors can also be genetic. So if you have siblings or an uncle or your parent or grandfather had diabetes, you're more likely to also develop or maybe potentially get diabetes as well. So it's very prevalent. The latest statistics show that 30 million Americans, so that basically translates into the 10% of the population, has diabetes. And it's a 24/7 disease. So it affects not only the individual who has it, but also their loved ones as well. And it's also very costly. So it's been shown that the estimated economic cost of diagnosed diabetes is about $327 billion a year.
So hold it. $327 billion mm-hmm. to our healthcare system.
Yep.
And growing.
Mm-hmm.
The trends look like diabetes is not going to atrophy anytime soon.
Right.
It's only growing mm-hmm. in terms of diagnosis. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, it's estimated that by 2050, 50% of the about 50% of the population will at least be a greater risk for prediabetes and diabetes as well.
Okay, Julie, as someone who has been working in the food and really health and wellness industry, especially dairy in the last 12 years, I'm really thinking about the war on sugar. Why is it so prevalent today?
Well, and Cara can jump in too, but I think part of it is that we took a real strong stance, or the folks took a real strong stance on fat. We reduced the fat, and instead of following the guidelines of what should have been done, people said, well, we'll have fat free. Usually when you take out the fat, you either have to add in sugar or salt, basically, to make it taste good. And so that's what happened. And there was a proliferation, and we talk about the snack well generation, and that was in the height of my dietetic career as well, that people thought, oh, this is going to be it. So they eat all these things that were fat-free. Red licorice was fat-free, not calorie-free. And it would, you know, people ate it like it was, you know, going out of style. If it's fat-free, it's got to be good. And we can see from looking back that people got bigger. People got fatter. Whether it was one of those causes or a whole bunch of things, we also became a little more sedentary. You know, you don't have to get up and turn the channel on the TV anymore. You can sit there and push a button. So there's so many things that have changed in our lifestyle and in America that all contribute to that. But what we know is that compared to 30, 40 years ago, people are bigger, and obesity and as Cara said, overweight, inactivity, all are some of those risk factors that increase your risk for diabetes.
Cara, as you think about it, how is Joslin Diabetes Center positioned to help address this as a thought-leading, science-based organization?
Yeah, so we at Joslin, we have not only have our clinic where we see patients, we have an adult clinic and a pediatric clinic, but we have the majority of the people that work at Joslin are actually in research, and they do their own research, whether it's at the very deep molecular level, but also we have a lot of human research too, where we do some interventional studies. So we really want to get to the bottom of it and really see how diet or other factors can influence glucose or influence glycemic control, meaning how well people are managing their diabetes. And in addition to that, I think just being really well-versed in the literature surrounding what all of these recommendations are. So at Joslin, we've always sort of recommended having a lower carb approach in terms of managing diabetes and controlling blood sugars, not necessarily like low carb, very low carb ketogenic diets at all, but we really have come from a well-balanced approach in terms of including healthy sources of carbohydrate within that amount, in addition to choosing and including healthy fats and a moderate amount of protein. So that's kind of been our stance for a long time. However, it doesn't mean that we're not open to change. And I think that as more and more research come out, whether we conduct it or not, or whether it's analyzing the data, I think that we are really trying to get the most evidence-based and high-quality studies that will determine our recommendations.
You know, with all of the focus on research, can you talk specifically about what we've discovered?
Sure. A lot of the findings have shown a neutral, if not beneficial, association with diabetes. A lot of studies have looked at different types of dairy, like the different types of categories, whether it's yogurt, cheese, milk, and the effect of dairy fat on diabetes risk. And a lot of the studies have shown that just the overall intake of dairy has been associated with a lower risk up to a certain amount. There is actually a specific study that showed a nonlinear effect, which means that past a certain amount, it could potentially not do much more of a benefit, but up to a certain amount, which is the recommended amount each day, 3 servings a day, can really reduce the risk of diabetes. And there have been some small intervention studies that look at dairy and diabetes, which mean, you know, they take a certain amount of people, they tell them to eat a certain amount of dairy and then look at diabetes outcomes. And a lot of those studies have showed that there's really no harm and that their insulin resistance in some cases can go down, meaning that they have maybe a better control over their blood glucose. And they've looked at other markers like their post-meal glucose, and maybe adding dairy in can help with that. So, and again, with those studies, those are really small populations. So there definitely is lacking a lot of research on those types of studies. So hopefully more and more will come out. And a lot of the recent evidence in terms of saturated fat shows that saturated fat from dairy may be acceptable within the total calorie intake. So we still want to keep in mind that food has calories, and more calories than we need isn't always good. So we want to make sure that if it certainly can fit, and definitely has been shown not to be harmful for diabetes risk, or even when you have diabetes, to make those diabetes outcomes any worse.
And I think too, Cara, one of the exciting things also, you talked about milk, cheese, and yogurt, but there's also research looking at whey protein and adding that and having whey protein help control some of those blood glucose levels. Mm-hmm. So we talk about milk, cheese, and yogurt a lot, but whey protein is one of those, I think, pieces out there that we can all be proud of with that story. So more exciting research, and also one to come very soon from Joslin.
Yeah, Joslin, we did an intervention study. So kind of like what I was talking about, people who already have diabetes, the intervention was to add either whole fat dairy, low fat dairy, or just eat dairy as they usually would, no additional dairy. And just looking at the diabetes outcomes specifically to see if it maybe worsened their blood sugar control or made it better, or whether their blood lipids, like their cholesterol, went up or down. So the stay tuned for that those outcomes. And there also was an observational study that was conducted. So looking at a group of people over a certain amount of time, what happened while they were just eating however much dairy in terms of their blood sugars and other outcomes.
You know, so many choices in this research is really a bedrock of solid information and the affiliation with Harvard. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Joslin has been, we're in sort of the teaching hospital bubble, so to speak, in Boston. So education is like the cornerstone of what we do. So we really are closely affiliated with Harvard. A lot of our endocrinologists work at Harvard, teach at Harvard Medical School, and go through the training, are Harvard trained. And so we really value education in the highest level. And so, and not only with our affiliation with Harvard, but with the education that we do at Joslin, and kind of going back in history, Elliot Joslin was really big for his time on education. He really valued the importance of having educators for people with diabetes.
And I think that's just a really important part, because sometimes, especially in today's society, we get kind of cynical about, well, what science are you looking at? Because I can look at mine online and find my answer as well. But when you have folks like the Joslin Diabetes Center working closely with Harvard Medical School, we're really not playing around here. We're talking about real science that's peer reviewed and is center of the bullseye for our medical community to look at and make recommendations from.
Right.
And I think one thing important when you're talking about research, Lucas, and we were talking about, you know, dairy farmers' long-term investment in this, is that National Dairy Council funds the research. We don't fund results. So results come up, and the ultimate goal of research is to replicate and get the same results. And sometimes that happens, sometimes it doesn't. And so I know we're all real excited to see the research that comes out and the results that come out of the study that Joslin's currently doing. But National Dairy Council, again, collaborates with major universities, government agencies, and other leading scientific and health NGOs across the country to make sure that all of this information is being tested and proven again, so we can all be confident that for us, dairy is a healthy food, and it has a vital role in people's placemat.
Great background on that. And as you talk about diets, I know the DASH diet or Mediterranean diets are often talked about. Can either one of you speak to that?
Yeah, so there's been a lot of research about the Mediterranean diet. So we talked a lot about that today, and how those who adhere closely to the Mediterranean diet have been shown to have a much lower risk of diabetes.
And what is that diet
made up of? Yeah, so the Mediterranean diet is based from people that live in the Mediterranean area, which it doesn't mean that you have to live in Greece to eat a Mediterranean-type diet, but it basically consists of a lot of fresh fish, lean protein, so fresh fish, poultry, in addition to lots of fruits and vegetables, using olive oil or eating a lot of nuts, so a lot of unsaturated fats. In addition, they eat a lot of yogurt and cheese and a lot of legumes, so a lot of like beans, like hummus and chickpeas. So a lot of it's not plant-based, but it includes a lot of plants and it includes a lot of healthy fats and lean protein. So, and a lot of it is fresh too. So it's not only the food specifically, but the how the foods are prepared, where they come from. And I think that it's a great guide to follow. Anyone can really follow it.
So let's switch to the DASH diet, because mm-hmm. I know that's one that we seem to hear referred to often. Mm-hmm. Julie?
DASH stands for Dietary Approaches to Stop Hypertension. It's been around for, I'll say, 25, 30 years. And again, very researched. I think Dairy Council was involved also. Dairy research was a part of that. And then one of the interesting things they found out is that they looked at whether it was just the fruits or just the vegetables, and dairy was a part of that. And again, as we know, dairy is a nutrient package of lots of things, not only the minerals and the vitamins, but also protein. So there are lots of things going on that people just don't eat a nutrient. They eat a food, and foods come in different kinds of packages, if you will. And to Kara's point, you know, whether it's Mediterranean or DASH, one of the things that Jocelyn talks about, which I think is awesome, is they talk about the placemat, not just the my plate. Because sometimes if you look at the plate, things like dairy, a glass of milk, they forget about those. But there are other things that go into that. And so when you look at the entire placemat, it includes more things. And having, we talked about this morning even, a diversity of foods. So to Kara's point, it's a lot of different kinds of things. And whatever meal plan resonates with you and works, it's a lot of times it's not what you have, it's what you don't have. So whether it's fruits or vegetables or nuts and legumes, dairy, et cetera, we know that of the three servings that's recommended for folks, people get about 1.6 on an average. So even just getting the other two servings of dairy would be huge to help improve people's diets.
You know, the history that we're talking about in terms of the legacy of relationships, can either of you talk about the National Dairy Council's role, the partnership? Mm-hmm. I believe it's like a 5-year commitment with the Jocelyn Diabetes Center.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we have a partnership, like you said, with the National Dairy Council, and together we've been able to produce a lot of educational material. And in the form of videos, like cooking videos, cooking with dairy. There was one that was like a broccoli cheddar soup, kind of like one of those just cooking videos where it's really addicting to watch. I watch them all the time.
Sounds yummy.
Yes. So we were able to put that together. We were able to really just get the message out of the science and the fact that dairy really does fit in a healthy diet. And whether that's through it, just like I said, educational materials like handouts and things like that, but also just different talks that we've done. And it's a great partnership because it's really working together to get clear communication out to the population who might not know what the benefits are or may have heard from a headline that, you know, that this food isn't good for you or that this food is better, or just going through the grocery store and seeing so many other options and alternatives and really not knowing what's better for you.
So, and I take that information, the great information that Jocelyn is working on and producing, and in my role, and I would say the other, my coworkers throughout the United States that work with dairy, disseminate that information and work with health and wellness professionals, with our various thought leaders and folks to give that information to them so they can then take it back to their clinics, to their practices, and implement a lot of that information and share that research with them.
Mm-hmm. So you're at an event recently, and you talk about going around the country and speaking. What are those top-line questions that you're receiving as a result of the research?
A variety of questions. I think it's just going back to what we know the strong evidence is. In terms of answering those.
I think too, Kara, one of the things that struck me during your presentation was you shared a really interesting story, unintended consequences of one of your patients, and their beverage choice.
Yeah, so I had a patient one day come in and we were reviewing his blood sugars and they were running pretty high, especially after his lunchtime meal. And I usually take a diet recall. What do you usually have for breakfast, lunch, and dinner? And it came out that he was drinking a lot of rice milk. And I asked him, oh, why are you drinking rice milk? Just out of, I always ask, you know, what the reason is behind if, you know, if they're not using a cow's milk or, you know, do they have lactose intolerance? You know, what might be the reason? And so he just said, oh, I don't know. I thought it was healthier. So I just chose this option. And so we went over the macronutrients and the breakdown and how, number one, how many carbohydrates were in that rice milk, but also the fact that it's a really high glycemic index beverage, meaning it raises blood glucose a lot more compared to something like milk or lower in carbs that has protein and fat. So we, you know, just that catch maybe I think really could help his blood sugars moving forward, but also, you know, just clear the air and clear the fact that, you know, there's nothing wrong with cow's milk. And especially in his case, I think it could really help him lower his blood sugars.
You know, it's interesting. So in the world of our dairy community, we call that a rice beverage.
Mm-hmm, right.
Because we know there's no cow's milk in
exactly.
That. But ultimately, he probably speaks like a lot of Americans mm-hmm. that are thinking, oh, I thought I was doing something healthier. Mm-hmm.
I hear that a lot with almond beverage.
Thank you, yeah.
oat beverage. Or, yeah.
So how did we lose, you know, for having 100 years of nutrition education and commitment to health and wellness, you know, why do consumers make choices like this? Why are they conflicted and are upside down with where we've historically have had nutrition mm-hmm. education and now they're following trends or fads?
Yeah, I think what you said, a lot of it is trends and fads. And I think a lot of it is people want a really easy solution. So they might see something that looks new and really healthy and think this is the solution to all of our problems, especially with our growing epidemic of all these chronic diseases. And so I think when something comes out and that's an alternative, they might choose that.
I think across the board, dietitians will say, eat a variety of foods. I know it sounds boring, but it's so true. But if you look at the Mediterranean, the DASH, the other healthy eating plans, that's what they do. And that's why they work. It's a variety of foods. One of the big red cautions for me, if I hear about a meal plan, a diet, or somebody says, oh, I'm giving up whatever food group. Chances are, if you give up a food group, you're giving up a whole bunch of important nutrition that goes along with that. Now, if someone has a true allergy, then, you know, it's a different story. Mm-hmm. It's life-threatening. But if they're giving it up because they think it's a fad or it's cool or whatever, you're missing out on a lot.
Mm-hmm. Kind of bringing it back to the core of this conversation, we know that moderation, caloric consumption, having an active lifestyle, those are all real pillars to healthy eating. But ultimately, if you're a type 2 or a pre-diabetic that's really looking at your foods and looking at your exercise, you can find comfort knowing that dairy has a place on the placemat, as mm-hmm. you said, Julie, and as the Joslin Diabetes Center refers to it. And if you're a dairy farmer or a consumer listening to mm-hmm. this, what are some takeaways that you'd like them to have?
Yeah, so like you said, dairy can certainly fit in a healthy placement, a healthy lifestyle. As specifically with dairy, certain types of dairy like cheese, yogurt, cottage cheese, those have very low amounts of carbohydrate. So if you're trying to keep your carbohydrates down a certain amount or control the amount for your blood sugars, it's something that you can really incorporate without raising your blood sugar. So, and again, not only the fact that it's low carb, but it also has a lot of protein and the fat that's satisfying. So if you were having a snack, having like a piece of fruit is great, but it would be even better to have maybe a piece of cheese with that so that you'll feel a little bit more satisfied. So it's certainly, there's a way of getting those 3 servings in each day. And to some people, it sounds like a lot, but it really isn't that much, and you certainly can make it fit, whether it's having a yogurt with your breakfast, that piece of cheese for a snack, and maybe a glass of milk with dinner. You can certainly hit all the bases without really doing any harm and if not doing a lot of benefit to your diet by getting all those nutrients.
And Julie, I know that you brought your career home to the dairy community. As a, if a dairy farmer is listening to this or someone who's in the business of bringing dairy to life and giving consumers that excellent dairy experience, what's the takeaway for them?
Well, that dairy is essential and dairy is a part of a healthy diet, but it's also a delicious part of a healthy diet. And so when you look at a lot of the other foods, I think it's what makes the whole grains, the fruits, the vegetables, sometimes even taste better, whether it's cheese or however it's prepared. So dairy pulls all that together. And I'd be remiss in saying, too, for those listening for that have diabetes, please check with your healthcare provider before making any changes. We've talked about a lot of exciting stuff, but you need to talk with your healthcare provider, your doctor or dietitian. Mm-hmm. And for people with prediabetes, again, talk with your medical providers, but there's a lot of really exciting things. You don't need to be part of the statistic. Mm-hmm. By simply moving more, eating less, eating a variety of things, but eating less, and just keep monitoring and knowing your numbers. So
as we wrap this episode, any closing comments?
I think that, you know, just continue to, when you see a headline, just continue to take it with a grain of salt, so to speak. You know, maybe you're hearing a lot of different conflicting recommendations, I think, especially in the media or in various headlines, but really just kind of go straight to the source, ask your registered dietitian or your healthcare provider. What might be good for one person might not be good for you and vice versa. So it's very individualized, but you know, I think in terms of dairy, it certainly can fit. And what we're I just look forward to seeing more and more research about it.
Yeah, and I think that's, to me, Cara, the exciting part, too, is the emerging research. We keep seeing new things, and sometimes people get frustrated that, you know, you see different headlines and things maybe sometimes are conflicting, but this is how we learn. This is how mm-hmm. we get better. And, the partnership with Joslin and the dairy farmers, all of us want to make sure that people stay healthy. So it's either the product they produce or the care that Joslin provides. And so that's what we're most concerned about, is keeping people healthy.
As we wrap up our conversation, I want to take a quick moment and say thank you to Kara and Julie for joining us today. And as you've heard, thanks to the investment of dairy farmers as well in some cutting edge research from the Midwest Dairy staff and all staff across the country that are working hard to raise awareness about this important research. It is exciting to see that individuals can still enjoy their favorite milk, cheese, and yogurt as they work to manage their type 2 or prediabetes. We continue to work hard to really share this information with physicians and health and wellness professionals who could then provide advice to their patients. Help get the word out. Ask your dietitian, ask your physician, hey, have you heard? Make sure that we're out there working together to debunk some of the myths that have plagued nutrition advice, especially of recent years. Again, I'm Lucas Lynch, and it is an honor to serve as CEO of Midwest Dairy and working on behalf of the 7,000 dairy farmer families from across the Midwest, but really to the 41,000 across the country. Thanks for what you do each and every day. And we're proud to work with you. And also to you, thanks for listening to this episode of Dairy on the Air. If you want to hear more about various issues affecting the dairy industry, please subscribe to our show on your favorite podcast platforms, including iTunes and Stitcher, or watch our website, midwestdairy.com, for future episodes. Until next time, thanks for listening.